Hi, Filmatics. Thank you for coming back to part two with our special guest, Kevin Bannerman. Kevin is a producer and former studio executive for Disney Feature Animation and Fox Family Films, known for movies such as Anastasia, Ice Age, Pocahontas, The Lion King, Ever After, Cinderella Story, and produced Forever Plaid, the movie, and 30 Days Until I'm Famous. So let's welcome Kevin Bannerman back. Kevin, welcome back.
Hi, Marilyn. Thank you so much. It's really thrilling to be here.
Yeah, so we were talking, and Kevin was sharing his story, how he came, moved from Kansas. His father was a pilot, was in the Air Force, because my dad was a pilot in the Navy, so sorry about that. And so you came to Los Angeles, and your love for acting, and you landed a secretary job at MGM, and you're the second male secretary there with the help of a lovely female. And then you worked for the producer of Pennies from Heaven. And then there was the famous strike back then, right?
Yes, an actor strike in 1980, which went on for a long time, like 8 months or something.
Yeah, and then so you got reassigned to a new post. And so we could pick up from there, right?
Yeah, so that was working for a vice president of the studio named Lynn Aris. And Lynn really truly became my mentor when her boss, Freddie Fields, who'd been running the studio, went into independent production. And he brought her over as a VP. And then she went in one day. He hired a woman to be our creative executive, like to be his reader, basically. And the woman had no experience, and she really was not good at doing coverage, and Lynn got a couple copies of her coverage and marched into Freddie and said, there's no way I'm going to work with this woman. She doesn't know what she's doing. You have to promote Kevin. And I'm not sure that Freddie was ever a big fan of mine, but he listened to Lynn and he promoted me, and I became a creative executive in the company. And I did that for about 3 years. And Lynn, like I said in the earlier part, Lynn 100% was a mentor. She backed me up. She fought for me. She helped launch my career, and I would not have had the career had it not been for her. And that's extraordinary, and I'm forever indebted to her for that.
Well, that's amazing that, like, I mean, that's one of the key things that we hear with all the guests that come here, that they meet someone that actually champions them. So it's just, you know, whether it's luck, being in the right place, right time, or who you know, but I think you were destined for this as well, because your career path is so amazing. You worked at Disney, Fox Family Films, all the projects that you worked on just were so just extraordinary talent and vision that you have. So you're working for Freddie Fields, right? And he's an independent producer.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Can you share some of the projects that you worked on?
So let's see, we shot Poltergeist 2 during that time. And that was kind of fun because I went down on the set and I watched Geraldine Fitzgerald, who was in that movie. It was classic film actress. I got to watch her work. We did Crimes of the Heart with Jessica Lange and Diane Keaton and Sissy Spacek. I worked a little bit on the script for that, but not much because there wasn't much to do. It was an adaptation of a play. And then I was there while Freddie was developing Glory, which Denzel Washington won his first Oscar for. And, you know, it was amazing watching Freddie. Freddie had been an agent. He founded CMA, which became ICM, along with David Beagleman. They were Judy Garland's agents in the late 50s, early 60s. He was like the classic Hollywood agent, and he knew how to sell. And when he was selling Glory and trying to get it set up, I would sit there in his office and listen to him make these phone calls, and the selling job he did was amazing. He just was brilliant at it. And I only wish I was even halfway as good a salesman as he was. But during that time, one of the scripts I found and we optioned was a script named Black Cat Run, which was one of the first scripts and the first script optioned, I believe, by writer-director Frank Darabont. And Frank went on to do The Shawshank Redemption and The Green Mile. And because Frank is such an amazing guy and such a good guy, there is actually a character in one of his movies named Kevin Bannerman, because he just is that kind of a guy.
I love that. I love that. That's amazing. Did you ever get to do any like acting like Alfred Hitchcock style on any of the projects?
No. It's funny though. I did do extra work when I was in my early 20s, and you can see very fast glimpses of me in several movies. But no, I never did that kind of thing. the closest I got to it, which was fun, was when I was at Disney Animation. The live action side had remade The Incredible Journey, and they cast a couple actors who didn't really work out, and they had to recast it, and they gave it to Animation because Animation, you know, was used to doing voiceover work and bringing actors who, you know, they knew how they sounded like, and then recording them and getting performances out of them. And I got to read lines opposite Sally Field and Don Ameche.
Oh my gosh.
That was a great experience. That was such a great experience.
Wow, how wonderful. I mean, what a magical world. So you're working for Freddie, who is like a legend in itself, right?
Yeah.
Just being like Judy Garland's agent. And he was the founder of CAA? One of like, it was pre-CAA?
CMA, which became ICM.
Oh,
yes.
CMA, that became International Movie Management. Okay, ICM.
Yes.
Wow, that is amazing. And so then what happened, like, what was your next step that you went to after working for
Freddie and I had a falling out one day, and kind of went nose to nose in an argument over a script with the writers in the room, and the next day he fired me. I was out of work for a few months, and I got a job with a production company, worked there for a year and a half, and then moved on from there.
We're just seeing if we got, if we have, hello, Kevin, do we have you? Kevin?
What happened? Yeah, here I am.
Okay. Yeah. So you, the Wi-Fi probably went out a little bit. So you went to a year at a production job, and then from there, did you go to Disney? Was that your first place or Fox?
Yes. So a friend of mine said, oh, Disney's looking for a development executive. So I got an interview with them and interviewed. It was like a 5-hour process. You interview with so many people over there. And that's where they asked if I knew musicals. And I was like, oh yeah, I love musicals. And we talked to musicals for a while. And then did I know Disney movies? And I was like, yeah, of course I knew Disney movies because I'd grown up with them. I'd seen all the animated movies except for, I think, one. That was in, I think, March, I want to say, and then finally in June, they hired me. And just as a little great side story, one of the reasons they hired me was because before I went into the interview, which was in March, a movie had come out in that previous November called, The Rescuers Down Under. And I hadn't seen it, and I thought it was a little kids' movie. And so I thought, oh, I'm going into Disney. This is before it was out on home video. And I was like, oh, I got to find it. So I actually found it in a movie theater playing in Cerritos at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, went to see it. And on Monday, one of the first persons I met with in the interview was the producer of that movie. And he asked if I'd seen it. And I told him the story. And so, you know, I kind of fessed up and said, yeah, I just saw it. And when they hired me 3 months later, he said, one of the reasons we hired you is because you did your homework. So, a lesson to everyone, because I teach now, I kind of teach professionalism to college students, and I always tell them a story, like, be prepared, do your homework, go and get all the information you possibly can if you're going to interview with somebody or at some company. So I got that job, and I learned so much. It was a great place to work, and it was a horrible place to work. Like, there was a lot of pressure, and there was some very temperamental people who worked there, but I learned so much about storytelling and story structure and things that I thought I knew and I didn't know. And they were it was an amazing group of people, working with the directors, working with the artists, seeing things come to life. I mean, you know, and from the day I walked in, like literally, I think the day I started, they put me on Pocahontas. And I worked on Pocahontas the entire time I was there because it was in production when I left, with the director, Mike Gabriel, a story artist named Joe Grant, who had worked on Pinocchio. That was amazing. And learning about art and learning about storytelling. I remember Mike Gabriel going to his office one day and he was watching The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, the animated, you know, Ichabod Crane movie. And he said, watch this sequence. And it was the sequence where the horseman is chasing Ichabod. And he said, here's like a 7-minute sequence with no dialogue. It's just action and character and dynamics. And boy, was that a great little lesson to think about. Like, you don't need people always yammering to each other. Animation is a visual form, and it's a visual form of storytelling. So you want to marry both great storytelling with great visual art. And it was just a great lesson. So I learned so much there. I worked on Pocahontas. I worked on Lion King. I hired writers for both of those. I worked on Hunchback of Notre Dame. I hired the first writers on that. I brought writers in. I worked on some shorts, on a Mickey Mouse short and on a recycling short. It was just an incredible place to work. It was very stressful in a lot of ways.
Long days. How long does it take?
It was... Pardon?
How long does it take? Because you said you were there at the start of Pocahontas, and when you left, Pocahontas was still being made. Like, how long traditionally is an animation?
Once you get your basic script, you know, in development, you probably, before you actually start animating, it's probably a good 2 years, because you got to do character design, storyboarding, and things like that, and it just depends the way they work. And then once you're in production, it's about a 24-month process. So Pocahontas kind of hit the ground running because Jeffrey Katzenberg loved the idea of it. And so it was definitely put on the fast track. So I think it was, I don't know, it might have started production by the time I left, but it was in development that whole time. And I found, put the writers on that, and one of the writers I found was a woman right out of AFI named Susanna Grant, who went on to become a major Hollywood director. Writer, director, just lovely, lovely woman. So I kind of feel like I had a hand in, you know, launching a couple significant careers in Hollywood, which was great.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really beautiful. And I love how, like, women helped you and then you helped some women as well. So that's just a beautiful, beautiful, you know, like, just paint it back, paint it forward. That's lovely.
You have to. You can't underestimate the value of having a strong network and strong relationships, which are built on trust and built on understanding that, you know, if someone helps you, you pay it forward. You know, you have to. Otherwise, you're just, you know, who wants to hang out with you?
Yeah, it's because it's a really tough business for, I think, anyone that's trying to get in. You know, so many people are just trying and they're working on their craft, but it's so beautiful to hear these stories of how someone, you know, gave you that chance and then you just propelled and you just blossomed into this amazing producer. And thank goodness for your friend, Linda. She had a good eye.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's great. I kind of pride myself on spotting good young writers and knowing good talent and knowing good writing. And so I've been able to launch some careers and bring on some writers and work with them, you know, that have been around for a long time. And I gave them their first break on a lot of things, and it's a first maybe significant break. And that's a great feeling. It's a great feeling.
Yeah. And it's like you, then you eventually left Disney. And is that when you went to Fox Studios? Fox Family
Films? Yes. So Fox was just launching its family films division. So I went, I was lucky enough to get hired over there. And at the time, you know, they were doing both live action and animation, and very few people had animation experience and very few executives. And so I had live action experience. So I married both skills, and that was a phenomenal experience. I never worked anywhere as nice as Fox. they were just the best. The crew was best. The executives, all the bosses were great. Our team was great. It was just awesome. And they had just made a deal with Don Bluth and Gary Goldman. And so they wanted to do animation. And, it's funny, at Disney, they really, really don't like Don Bluth because he had left. He was a Disney animator who left and started his own stuff. And they always kind of try to get in his way and block his releases or surround them or whatever they can do to make his movies not perform as well as they might. But he certainly knew how to make a movie. And he was tough. It wasn't easy to work with him all the time. But we had a great producer we brought on named Maureen Donnelly, who had been an executive at Disney with me. And she had left Disney also. And we brought her in to be the producer on Anastasia. And she was great and did a fantastic job. And Anastasia was, we put on the fast track. We started development on that one in probably August of 94, and it was in theaters in December of 90, or November of 97. And so that was an incredibly fast track production. But, Meryl, it was just one of the thrills of my life.
Really?
Because, it was building a musical from the ground up. And
oh my gosh.
So for me, who had loved musicals and who had grown up on these musicals, who'd grown up with, with Damn Yankees and The Music Man and Gypsy and Funny Girl and Oliver and all these great musicals that I would see and just love. And then working at Disney when we did Lion King and Pocahontas and getting to, be in that world but not directly working on the music. Then at Anastasia, I was the guy who was tasked with leading the charge on it. And, of course, it was my boss, but it was the way Fox worked was if you were the executive, you had to really take responsibility for every aspect of it. So I got to go to New York and I got to interview. And in a couple of days' time, I interviewed Stephen Sondheim and Cy Coleman and Kander and Ebb and Betty Comden and Adolph Green and talked to them about it and pitched the project, and everybody loved the idea of it. And then I had met some songwriters at Disney, Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty. They did a project at Disney that didn't go forward, but they were lovely, lovely people. And I pitched it to them, and I came to believe that they were probably the best suited for it. And we had to have them do a couple spec songs, and then we had another team, a British team, do a couple spec songs. And Lynn and Stephen understood the animation was a visual medium and not a stage medium, and they wrote lyrics that were active that you could animate to and do action to, where the British songwriters who were from the stage really wrote as if a person was standing on stage singing a song. It was very, very different things. And Lynn and Stephen got the job, and out of that experience, we created what I think are a couple really classic songs. Journey to the Past, which the incredible Liz Calloway sang on the film and sings to this day in her act. Once Upon December, which is a beautiful, beautiful song that Liz sang in the movie. And I got to work with Angela Lansbury and Bernadette Peters.
Oh my gosh.
Meg Ryan was in it, and John Cusack. And, we pitched to a lot of people. We pitched to Johnny Depp, and he passed. And we got John Cusack, who couldn't have been better. We pitched to Angela Lansbury. I truly, really wanted Doris Day to kind of do the role of the grandmother. Imagine what that would have done for me. Imagine that, Marilyn, if I'd gotten Doris Day on something.
But, oh my God.
That did not happen. But we got Angela Lansbury, who, I'd sit in the recording studio with Angela, and, we would lean against each other. She would eat her sandwich. She always brought a little sandwich and a cup of tea.
But she's Miss Murder, She Wrote. She's Angela Lansbury is I think, pretty darn tootin' good.
Oh, my God.
She brought her own sandwich and tea. Oh.
She brought a little sandwich wrapped in foil and a thermos of tea, and she would take a break and have her sandwich and her tea. And she couldn't have been sweeter. And then Bernadette Peters, was, to be in a recording studio with a 60-piece orchestra and Bernadette Peters, there was just nothing like it. It was truly, this was one of the greatest days of my life. I was in New York. We had Lynn and Steven there. We were recording our first song, which was Bernadette's big number, with a 60-piece orchestra.
Oh, and wow. 60 pieces? How do you fit them all in one room?
Yeah, right? There's big recording studios that aren't really around anymore in New York. And it was a great, great day. And I remember sitting at the console with Lynn and Steven, and the downbeat started and the orchestra started, and Lynn turned to me, and I will never forget this, and she said, "Kevin, we're making a movie." And it was great. And then, so after all day in the studio with Bernadette and the orchestra and recording a couple songs, I went back to my hotel room and I got a phone call that Angela was committing to the movie. So it's just like the best 12 hours in my life.
Oh, that's so brilliant. I mean, I'm getting like goosebumps. I'm just like so happy for you. Like, it's like your dream came true. Like, you did it. You're doing it. Like, and you're making spectacular movies. That's amazing. And that's such a beautiful story too. Like, legendary people. Legendary.
Exactly. Exactly. So just had a great time. Then Forte, who was amazing, was really Lori's concept. She was her concept to do a story set in the Ice Age. It was my idea to take this particular story structure that I knew from an old movie and kind of work from there. And we did Monkey Bone, which was, did not turn out to be a great movie at the end of the day, but it was a great movie to make because we took over an entire studio, Ryn Mawr over on Cahuenga, which was the old Zoetrope, which was an old independent studio. And we had sets on all the sound stages, and we had puppets, and we had great actors, Brendan Fraser and Bridget Fonda, Whoopi Goldberg, and we had these huge, huge sets that were so amazing to go on to. So that was a blast to make. Did not do well, sadly, poor little Monkey Bone, but it was a great experience to work on that. And then after 7 years, I left Fox, and they were going through a bumpy ride, and they let a bunch of us go before Ice Age came out. And then, kind of the history of the world, like Ice Age came out, was a huge hit, but I was already gone. So, I did some independent producing. I did Forever Plaid, which Stuart Ross, who's a friend of mine, created the show. And we did a 5-day shoot for the movie, kind of a live concert staging, and that was fun. And then a lot of posts on that. And that was a blast. And I did a movie for VH1 called 30 Days Until I'm Famous, which also had some original music in it. So that was really cool. And that was a lot of fun. And then I've been developing stuff and worked on some productions and worked with like the ASCAP Musical Theater Workshop and worked with up and coming theater writers, which I love doing. And I've developing projects, and I'm working with some directors right now. So it's all like, it's just this ongoing process that just keeps moving forward. And, I am the luckiest guy in the world to get to work in the only business I ever wanted to work in.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I love it. I love it. So cute.
So cute.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
And then it just cracks and cracks the ice. Like, I just.
So here's a true story, which is probably out there, but that character was never in the script. So we modeled the script. If you watch an old Western called Three Godfathers, a John Ford movie, with John Wayne as the most famous version, it's about three bank robbers who come across a covered wagon that was attacked by the Indians, and the mom is dying, and the only survivor is the baby, and she says, take the baby back to this town. And basically, we, looked at that structure and said, this is such a great idea with three animals taking a human baby back to civilization. All the other character stuff was unique to Ice Age and told from an original point of view and great characters and everything, but that scrap was not part of it. And then one day, the producer called me. She said, okay, when you're coming to New York next, because I was out there about every other week, we're going to pitch you something. And I just want to set it up for you that it's not part of the movie, but this guy who was head of layout came up with it. And we think it's really cool. We want to show it to you. So I was like, okay. So I got to New York. They showed it to me. And that was basically the opening of the movie. And I was just blown away by how creative and how funny and what a great character and just what a great prelude it was to the movie. And so I called my boss and told him the same thing Laurie had told me, like, you're going to see something. It's not part of the script, but we think it's really great. And in my humble opinion, it could be the trailer for the movie. And he loved it, and everybody loved it, and it became the trailer for the movie. And Chris loved the Chris Melodondri, who was my boss, who ran the Family Films Division, who now runs Illumination. Which is his company, by the way, so he doesn't run it. He owns it. It's his company. Loved the Scrat so much that they added the Scrat throughout the movie in little bits and pieces and everything. And clearly it made the movie even funnier than it was intended to be, and great bits. And that character's gone on to become an iconic character and not in the script at all. This just shows you the level of creativity of these artists that are in the animation world.
That is an amazing story. So it's gonna.
Yeah.
So where do our artists keep up with what you're doing?
I'm pretty active on Twitter because there's a lot of movie people who I love to respond to and interact with on Twitter. So I'm just at KR Bannerman at Twitter, and that's kind of the main thing. I'm on Instagram, but I don't really post it very often, and my Facebook private settings are very, very high. I kind of live in my own little. Facebook is my strictly and totally a friend world for me, and not a business world. So Twitter is the place to see me.
Is there anything upcoming that we can? I know you're developing stuff and you're teaching. Is there anything that like you want to share with us that's coming up for you as well?
I'm in the middle of pitching a really cool story, really cool adventure I've worked on for a long time about it. That's set in the Native American world. We have a director attached and a writer, and we're literally out pitching it now. And I'm developing a couple original musicals that I'm having a great time doing, but nothing actually in production right now.
Oh, well, you're going to have to come back and let us know when you got it, because we'd love to have you back.
And anybody wants to talk movies with me on Twitter, anytime, as you can tell, I love movies so much. I love movies. I am a film addict.
Oh, great. And so what was that Twitter handle again?
At KR Bannerman.
Oh, great. And then I'm at AA Banks or Hollywood Blonde. But I just want to thank you so much, Kevin Bannerman, for coming on the show. Your career is fantastic. You're fantastic. And I know your project's going to get a green light somewhere. We're so excited for your next project. And thank you for joining us today.
Oh, Marilyn, thank you so much for asking me. This has been a blast.
Yeah, and thank you, audience, for coming back to part two. Make sure you listen to part one and part two because it's amazing. And have a beautiful week, everyone.
Bye-bye.